This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Panel to Screen. I'm Bo.
And I'm Bell.
Spider-Bell, doing the things that a Spider-Bell does.
I like how you did the original Spider-Man lyrics with the 90s animated theme song.
Yeah. Music. It's an amalgam, Bell. It's a crossing of the multiverse, if you will.
That's interesting that you would do that. I mean, considering that there's none of that present in this film whatsoever.
No. Of course, we are talking about the film that is Spider-Man No Way Home 2021, ladies and gentlemen. This is a spoilerific review, okay? We are going to be talking nothing but spoilers from dusk till dawn. So if you have not seen it, this is your warning. Of course, if you haven't seen it, then you've probably already been spoiled, because I feel like this was the most spoiled movie in the history of movies.
Yeah.
Right?
There's one thing that didn't get spoiled for me. And I guess, I don't know. I mean, spoiled is one of those things where it's like people announce things. It's like such and such has been cast to do this and such has been cast. It wasn't like, you know, these weren't announcements. They were announcements, right? So like, is that a spoiler or is that just like...
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's fair enough. If we're talking about like the casting announcements, right? With like Toby and Andrew being in this movie, right?
Yeah. Toby and Andrew and Alfred Molina and Willem Dafoe.
But that's the thing. We knew about all that, but I guess that's the point. It was impossible to do this movie without, you know, that being out there.
If they had kept that under the wraps, this would have just been absolutely the most insane, you know, experience ever.
But it would have been impossible. I mean, like,
absolutely.
I think you're right, man. It would have been absolutely impossible. I did everything within my power, though, man, because like there was screen captures and, you know, images leaking, you know, the Daredevil. I mean, everything was, you know, floating around the internet, and anything that I ever saw that even slightly resembled an image of all three Spider-Men together on screen, I diverted my eyes immediately, shut down the computer, threw it out the window and lit it on fire. So I was very... very protective of myself to make sure that I could experience this as much as possible in the theater for the first time. Bell, let me just go ahead and just tip the bean can all the way over. I love this movie. Like, I don't even think I can rationally review this movie as anything more than an experience, like something that impacted me emotionally, deeply. I can't fairly critique this movie, man. I love this thing. I'm just putting it out there. I'm just getting that out there out of the way.
I also liked it, but I liked it better when it was called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, okay. All right. So it is the live action Into the Spider-Verse. This is true. This is true. And honestly, let's be real, man. This movie would not exist if not for the success of Into the Spider-Verse, right?
You know, I don't know. I was talking to Christy about that when we were on the way home. Like, I was, you know, I'm sitting there thinking about it. Like, and you know, I'm a writer for Spider-Man No Way Home. And, you know, I'm sitting there. We've been working on a script for years. We're getting everything in development, all this kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, we're like, cool, we got an idea. This is going to be insane. Like, fans are going to lose their mind. And then all of a sudden, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse comes out. Like, how heartbroken would you be?
It'd be pretty rough. I think, man, that movie gave the confidence and that audiences can get behind, you know, the multiverse in this kind of capacity. You know, they teased out the concept of the multiverse in Far From Home, but here we're going full-fledged. And, you know, it's an exciting time to be a comic book movie fan, man. Like, we're dealing with some high concept stuff. I mean, Loki really laid the groundwork there. But ultimately, man, this movie really cashes in the check that Loki wrote to some extent, right?
Yeah. And it's also weird that we're having a Spider-Man origin story, the third movie in.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's fine. That's fine. This movie, this franchise, man, has been very interesting, right? Because this Peter Parker, Tom Holland's Peter Parker, has always been very unique. And I think it took really all three of them standing together for me to realize just how unique all three of these Spider-Men have been. Like, they have very different stories. They have a lot of different connection points, but like, they've been defined by the stories that they have been a part of. This Spider-Man that we've been dealing with in the MCU, man, he is kind of the Iron Spider. He has been kind of the protege to Iron Man. That is the narrative that this Peter Parker has walked, and it's communicated in the way in which we see him engage with the world around him. For example, you know, when you had all three Spider-Men, like, you know, doing their thing, you had, you know, Tom was being much more techie. Like, he was much more in the kind of the tech department, whereas you had Andrew, who was much more in like the chemistry department, you know? And then you had, you know, Toby, who was more, I don't know, youth pastor department. He was just kind of there.
he was more in the, like, the, you know, Cronenberg body horror department.
Yeah.
with his organic web shooters.
You guys can't do that. Oh my gosh. All right. Oh man, there's just so much to talk about. First things first. Can we just acknowledge that Andrew Garfield came in and crushed it?
Yes.
Like he crushed it. He went from my least favorite Spider-Man to my most favorite Spider-Man in this movie. And I don't mean that in a bad way in terms of least favorite. They're all my favorite. But like, he was bottom tier of the three. He became number one after this, man. I love Andrew Garfield.
I always liked his, like, I liked him as Spider-Man. His Spider-Man movies weren't all that great. And I don't think that's necessarily his fault, but like.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I think he's always been a very good Spider-Man.
Absolutely. And I mean, we've talked about it before, but if you kind of compare Toby and Andrew, like, Andrew was a better Spider-Man, Toby was a better Peter Parker. And I feel like that's something that's kind of universally appreciated about their takes on the character. And it comes to fruition in this movie when we meet Andrew. He's in the Spider-Man garb. He is Spider-Man when he kind of comes through. When we meet Toby, he's Peter Parker. He's wearing his civilian garb. And even when they're like interacting with Tom, when they like pop down on the roof, Toby's still chilling in his Peter Parker garb, and Andrew's over there in his Spider-Man garb. They represent the two sides of this character that they both embodied, I think, the best in their own movies, and became kind of those counseling figures to Tom's Peter Parker in the midst of this, you know, just extreme tragedy that he was going through. I'm literally shaking, man. Like, this was a very emotional movie, to say the least.
Yeah. There were a lot of emotional beats, and like, you know, it's one of those things where I always just assumed that Uncle Ben had already died and he'd already had the conversation, the, you know, with great power comes great responsibility thing. But no, that is not at all what happened.
That's right.
We don't know what happened to Uncle Ben. It doesn't matter. Because Aunt May in the MCU is the one who has that moment. And it's not at the beginning of his spider career. It's like, you know, he's already saved literally the universe. So
Well, but at the same time, it kind of is at the beginning of his Spider-Man career, because this is really when he kind of becomes himself, right? Like, so when she said those words, by the way, like, you know, obviously not a dry eye in the house, but on top of that too, I mean, did you know that she was basically marked for death as soon as she said that?
As soon as she got hit by the thing, I was like, she's dead.
Yeah. There was no coming back from that. And she was acting like, you know, that she was walking it off. And I was like, how on earth is she okay? But when she said, you know, the line, I was like, oh no. Oh no, Peter. No. Like,
yeah.
It was heartbreaking. And even like when he shared that moment, you know, and shared the words with Andrew and Toby. And I'm referring to him, the actor's name. It's just easier than doing like the Peter 1, Peter 2 thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when they shared
three.
Peter 3. Oh, so great. Oh man. But no, that was just, it was so powerful. And, you know, Spider-Man has always represented, he's like my all time favorite superhero. He always has been. When I was a kid, he was the one that I always looked up to. Like he, to me, has always represented that hero that you can identify with, that you feel like that you're not alone. Like that awkward kid that's trying to do the right thing can kind of connect with Spider-Man in a unique way. And there's something about the way they've taken the Spider-Verse with, you know, obviously Into the Spider-Verse, and then like in this film, where there's this communal nature to that experience that, you know, that you feel like you're alone, but you're not alone. Like there are other people that understand this and can walk with you, even though for Peter in that moment, for Tom, like the pain of losing his aunt was so strong. And he was at first like casting those dudes aside. And then, you know, listen to them and realize that they share in his pain. Like they can help that shared pain kind of helps carry the load to some extent. And like, it's powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Share the load. Right.
Right. Oh man. All right. There was a distinct, a play here where, instead of defeating the villains, we're going to try to cure the villains. I think this also speaks to kind of, Tom's take on Spider-Man being a little bit more inspirational. Ironically, I'm pretty sure he's the only one that's actively killed anybody, though.
Yeah.
Because, like, he killed, aliens, but he was, like, murking aliens during Endgame. And I think Toby and Garfield never actually killed anybody, right? Like, it was all accidents.
Yeah, I think that might be right. But, I mean, like, he's never killed any. Those are, like, mindless alien soldier things.
Yeah, no, they don't count because they're not human, I guess, right?
Well, not even that. I mean, it just that I don't think those. It's kind of like just showing robots, right? Like Ultron's AI bots.
No, the bureaucrats, Morty. I don't care about them.
No, they're all like, basically hive mind controlled,
right?
Flesh robots.
All right. I mean, I'm cool with that. I mean, he does say activate instant kill mode, but even still,
You can still kill robots. You can kill flesh robots too.
Okay. Fair enough. But anyway, we got a return of all of the classics, man. Of the villains, who were some of the standout for you?
Well, I think Doc Ock was great. Willem Dafoe stole the show, I think, for sure.
Wow, yeah.
Green Goblin, obviously, is who I'm referring to there. It was really interesting to me because there are only five of them, and the whole time I'm thinking, okay, when's the six going to show up? When are we going to get the Sinister Six?
Yeah,
and we never did.
Yeah.
But I think for sure it was the Tobey Maguire villains that really stood out to me, just because I think those were better movies.
Better. Well, and that's the thing, right? Those are the classics right there. But I will say that I feel like Jamie Foxx, much like Andrew Garfield, like got an opportunity to shine in a way that he wasn't really able to in his movie.
Quite literally. Yeah, you give Electro an arc reactor. And I love what they did with his costume too, like, yes, with the sparky sparks around his eyes, like making the classic Shocker, like Spider-Man, face guard thing, that was really cool. And yeah, he definitely got a boost there, and he wasn't as like bad.
Well, I mean, like, that's the thing. Yeah, no, he didn't have like the creepy, nerd stalker thing going for him.
Yeah.
Even Dr. Connors, man, I thought the Lizard, it's interesting that they really went very true, Shocker notwithstanding, to like how the characters looked before, because I don't like that Lizard CGI doesn't really fit the MCU, and yet it worked in this context because we know that's the way he looks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They couldn't really change much of anything.
Yeah. And I mean, like, the MCU does do that though. Right. I mean, like, the Hulk has obviously changed over the course of several movies, to lesser and larger degrees, but yeah, they really made a choice here to like stay standard in terms of what we're familiar with.
Which I think makes sense. Like, Yeah, Christy, I didn't realize this. I thought she had seen the Amazing Spider-Man movies, but she hadn't. But still, like it wouldn't have mattered to her if he looked different,
right?
And honestly, like, I don't think it really matters. But I'm glad that they did it, just because that was a choice, and they made that choice, and I appreciate
it speaks to like that desire to really build that connection, that this is a continuation of those movies and really kind of a conclusion of those movies. Toby and Andrew, they never really got to finish their franchise as well. Arguably, they never really got to finish them at all. And so having this as kind of that final conclusion for their characters and for their arcs was really done so well, man. Like, okay, let's talk about the big moments, okay? Like, for you, what was one of the big moments? Like, what are some, like, just spitball them out. We'll go back and forth. What are some of the big moments?
Well, let me tell you, when we were talking about spoilers earlier, and how the whole movie was basically spoiled with all the casting news and stuff.
Right.
I want to tell a quick story about what was the one thing that wasn't spoiled for me in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Please do.
Okay. So we've been watching Hawkeye. We, just watched the season finale the other day, and the episode prior, showed Kingpin. And so I was like, holy crap, is that going to be Vincent D'Onofrio? It looks like Vincent D'Onofrio. I think it's going to be Vincent D'Onofrio. And so I was like, Christy hadn't seen Daredevil. So we started watching Daredevil. We watched like the first one or two episodes of Daredevil, like the night after we watched the second to last episode of Hawkeye. And just to kind of like give her an eye. They didn't, you know, we didn't get to Kingpin at that point. We didn't even get introduced to him really. But she did see Matt Murdock, right? And so she saw Matt Murdock. She saw him, the first couple episodes where he doesn't have a suit yet or anything like that, but kind of got an idea for who he is as a character and like, you know, what he does. And I'm super glad we did that, because the one thing that wasn't spoiled for me was Matt Murdock being freaking Spider-Man's lawyer at the beginning. That was huge.
Yeah, man, that was great. And you know, the funny thing is, in a movie with so many huge moments, that kind of gets overlooked, but that is massive.
That was the biggest thing for me, honestly. That was the moment where I was like, oh my God, like what? They're making this real? Like it was the thing that subverted my expectations the most. I had no idea that they were planning on, I guess, canonizing the Netflix.
Yeah. Well, and there is kind of a question as to whether or not that's true, right? Like, you know, so, I mean, we'll talk about Hawkeye in a future episode and, you know, the Kingpin and how he plays over there, which I guess spoilers for Hawkeye at this point.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
That's all right. That's all right. Normally I'm the one that spoils things for people, but this was you. So
yeah. Yeah.
More great TV talk up in just a few minutes, but first, we got to pay a few bills. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Matt Murdock canonized. Yeah, so we just totally spoiled Hawkeye.
Yeah, if you hadn't seen like the last two episodes of Hawkeye, sorry.
Yeah. No, I mean, we'll get there. We'll get there.
The only thing that spoiled was that Kingpin shows up, but you know, there's other things that happen with Kingpin that haven't been spoiled.
And that's something we'll talk about in the future, because I think that goes to a larger question as to whether or not the Netflix series has been canonized. Certainly these characters have, and these actors and these portrayals, but were we looking at an Elseworlds, or is that carrying over? Is that lore? Is that story carrying over? My hope is yes, but I think it's up for debate, and one we'll definitely talk about. When he caught the brick man.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, how'd you do that? I'm a very good lawyer.
Very good lawyer. It's so brilliant, man. I would love, by the way, if we had in the next movie, Tom Holland going up against Kingpin, you know what I mean? Like that would be huge.
Or like, you know, cause he's on his own now. Right. Like that was another big thing about this movie, is that like, nobody knows. So I guess one question that I had, nobody knows who Peter Parker is, but everybody, like everything that Spider-Man did previously, is all known and all done. Right. And everybody knows about that. I guess there's still an ambiguous issue as to whether or not he did or didn't kill Mysterio. I don't know if that was resolved or not by the spell.
It seemed like that was in fact resolved, but not by the spell. Like it seemed like that was resolved because law. Because he was exonerated.
Yeah. So there's still the public opinion of like, oh, Spider-Man could be a menace, and Jameson's always going to play into that. And, you know, the classic Spider-Man stuff that did Jameson.
Yeah. Did. Yeah.
I think it would be cool, though, for Peter, because, you know, they're both New York heroes, right? Peter and Matt Murdock.
Yeah.
For them to have kind of like, you know, an opportunity in the future to team up or something like.
Well, OK, so
fight for Kingpin.
So on the one side, I love that idea. But on the other side, I'm like, I think we're past that, though. Because his entire arc, like Tom's Spider-Man, has always been defined by the people looking to mentor him. Like he's been constantly kind of searching for that mentor to tell him who he is, right? It was Iron Man, it was Mysterio, to some extent, Doctor Strange. But ultimately, this movie is when he found like who he's supposed to be and who is the right mentor for him. And it's himself. I think there's something incredibly symbolic about Toby and Andrew coming in and kind of taking the place of that mentorship role that has been so quintessential to this particular franchise, to this particular trilogy, to set up Tom to really become the Spider-Man that he's supposed to be. I think we're going to see a much more adult Spider-Man. I think we're going to see a much more solo focus Spider-Man. I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunities for Black Cat to come in here in the future. One of the reasons I would love for him to go up against Kingpin is because that is such a, like a grown-up villain. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
You're not going to be doodling in your notebook while you're fighting Kingpin. So I just think there's a lot of opportunities there, man. I got to tell you, probably the moment, there's so many different moments that hit me so hard in this movie, but the one, man, that like just causes me to well up and cry every single time I think about it, when he caught her.
Oh God, I was about to say the same thing. Yeah. Dude. Yeah.
Dude.
I was like, he finally got to catch the girl. It wasn't his, but I got dust in my eye. Hold on, pause the movie. I'll be right back.
That performance, man, Garfield crushed.
Yeah, he knocked it out of the park with that.
He crushed it, man. Like this, the look on his face, like him catching himself. You could tell that he's been trapped in that moment for years.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's totally free of it, but at the same time, he did the thing that he's been trying to do for years. And it's just, oh my gosh, it just tore. It still tears me up, man.
Well, yeah. And like, you know, cause when Toby and Andrew are talking about like, so, you know, do you have an MJ? And Toby's like, you know, I worked it out with mine. He's kind of like, no, I don't know. You know, we have too much Spider-Man stuff to deal with. Yeah. I feel like him saving MJ, Andrew saving MJ in this, really kind of like helped him, is going to help him move past that and maybe like, yeah, you know, forgive himself and open himself up to like, you know, spider relationships and stuff. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I think that was super awesome.
Oh man, it was so powerful. It was so powerful. The three of them working together was really interesting too, because it was nice. They showed that they were really bad at it because
they're all like solos, you know? Yeah.
They're clotheslining each other. Like literally at one point, somebody clothesline is like one Spider-Man's clotheslines is another Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But like, you know, the whole, you know, I don't want to brag, but I will. I'm on the Avengers. And like, you know, when Toby starts freaking out about that, at first I was like, wait, do they have Avengers?
He's like, oh, that's cool. What are those? What is that? Yeah.
Oh, it was a great moment, man. Great moment. Now, here's a question though that I've got for you. This was actually pointed out to me by my sister after the fact. Because she went back, she was watching Spider-Man 2, and she points out that Jameson actually says in Spider-Man 2, Doctor Strange is taken, because they were talking about what to call Doc Ock, and somebody suggests Doctor Strange. He goes, that's good, but it's taken. So does Jameson, is there a Doctor Strange in the Spider-Man 1 universe?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
All right. Or maybe but he's just a different, well, I guess maybe he might just be a surgeon in that universe.
Yeah. That was a throwaway line in that movie to make MCU fans go,
you know? I know, but like, look at how this plays back. Look at how this comes back though. Like now we've got Dr. Strange, like the Dr. Strange.
20 years later. No, I'm sorry. No, that there is no hashtag. It's all connected moment.
It's all connected.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
All right, fair enough. But I thought that was pretty good. Yeah, of course the web fluid thing, the conversation around that, and even just the guys kind of going back and forth talking about their various villains. Andrew being kind of self-deprecating, like talking about like, oh, you guys are so cool, I'm just so lame, and then like building him up. Toby saying like, no, you are amazing. You need to say that you are amazing. Like,
it is the amazing Spider-Man. I thought that was clever.
Oh man, I loved it. I loved the way they supported each other. I loved the way that there was that brother mentality. I think Garfield was actually the one that said, I've always wanted brothers, which again kind of speaks to the orphaned kind of nature of Peter Parker. And yeah, just this this beautiful spider community that we find ourselves in. It's powerful stuff, man. I love this movie so much.
Yeah. It was like I super enjoyed it. This is one of those that I'll watch again and again, I think.
I've already seen it twice in theaters, and I will probably see it again if I can.
Yeah, I probably won't have a chance to see it in theaters. And the thing that makes me mad is the Spider-Man movies won't freaking come to Disney Plus.
Okay, so, all right. So, like I said, it's really impossible for me to critique this movie because of how much I love it. I am curious. All right. If I have to be critical of anything about this movie, it's the bittersweet ending and the way in which it felt a lot like Sony getting control of Spider-Man again. Now, I know that that's not necessarily the case, but that's kind of how it felt to me.
Yeah, because everybody who knows Peter Parker doesn't know him anymore. So, like, he's a brand new character, basically, with a completely new fresh start origin story.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about any of the other characters. He's not going to deal with any of the Avengers. And
well, you know, that's the thing that's interesting about it, though, because it's just Peter Parker. Nobody knows Peter Parker, but Spider-Man was still an Avenger at one point.
Yeah, and that's true. And I guess that's the idea, is that Spider-Man will still potentially show up in Avengers and Peter Parker will be in his own movies. I don't know, man. It feels the tension that exists between Sony and Marvel is just very palpable in this movie. And even like the way in which they did Venom dirty, you know?
So I haven't seen Venom Let There Be Carnage. I want to see it. I'm confused, though, because the only reason all those villains were pulled into this universe was because they knew Peter Parker was Spider-Man.
Right.
Does Eddie Brock know Peter Parker? Like, is there a Peter Parker? Like, are these universes connected?
So Venom knows that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. So had you watched Let There Be Carnage, Bell, then at the tail end of that movie, the end credit sequence is Eddie and Venom talking to each other and Venom explaining to Eddie that he's an interconnected hive mind that spans the multiverse and that Eddie couldn't even handle a fraction of what Venom understood or something like that. So Venom opens up his mind to Eddie. And in that moment, they get transported to the MCU.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, cool. And it's like, it's a big deal too. Cause like, you know, Jameson, on the TV saying Spider-Man is Peter Parker. And, you know, Eddie turns into Venom and Venom walks over to it and he says, that guy. And then he like licks the screen. We all thought it meant something. Turns out Feige just wanted a little clip. He just wanted a little bit, just a little drop. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
It meant nothing, Mel. It was funny. Don't get me wrong. It was funny, but man, Venom got done dirty in this movie.
Because that's the thing. It's like, I want to see Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock. Like, that's the Venom that I like. That I liked the Venom movie was cheesy as all get out, but I loved it. It was fun. And yeah, that's the Venom that I want to see, you know, be like an anti-hero with Peter Parker. But it seems like they're going to like not do that at all.
They're not going to do that. Well, but this is the other thing, too, because it's super confusing, right? Because then you have Morbius. And have you seen the trailers for Morbius?
There was one in front of Far From Home.
OK, so in that we've got Falcon. Or Falcon? Not Falcon. The Vulture.
Yeah, Vulture. Yeah.
Birdman. We got Vulture talking to Morbius, and then we got Morbius making a Venom reference. Vulture exists in the MCU. Venom exists in the Sonyverse. Where does Morbius exist? You know what I mean? Like, what? I don't think that Sony really knows what they're doing.
I think they're just, you know, playing with fire and seeing if they're going to get burned by Marvel contracts. Because I think the ball's completely entirely in their court. Is they have the characters. Marvel knows how to make the movies. But the thing is, I think they realize that, like, you know, there's money to be made here, maybe. And that for them to, like,
they're trying to squeeze out. They're just trying to squeeze out a little bit extra. Like, that's what it feels like. Because, like, you know, the Morbius connected to the MCU thing, I guarantee, man, that Vulture doesn't even show up. And I bet that's an end credit scene they just showed us in the trailer, which is so very Sony to do.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, they're just doing everything they can to try to like, oh, we're valid. See, Venom's going to be in the MCU. And then you watch the movie. It's like, I mean, but he wasn't, though. I mean, he was there for 2 seconds and he got drunk and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Like, Sony's not going to sell him the rights back. Obviously.
Right.
Maybe the best circumstance here would be for Sony to sell them the live action rights and them to keep the animated rights.
I think that would be amazing. I think that would be very clean. And I think, you know, obviously Into the Spider-Verse is incredible. I think that they've got a massive franchise on their hands with that and all the potential they could potentially do, like all the potential storylines they could go down with those various characters they have access to. It'd be incredible. And also, I mean, groundbreaking in terms of the animation that they've, you know, did with that movie. So, yeah, that would be awesome. But I think you're right. I think they are one of the few people out there, the few companies out there that have their fist on the throat of Marvel. You know what I mean? Like they've got a little grasp and they are not going to let go because it's like, you know, they're hanging on to this thing that's flying with rocket fuel. I don't know what the right phraseology is. Point is, they're not letting go.
And that's, yeah, they're very much going to, I think, test the waters with that and keep like messing with it. Because that's the thing, is it's like, you know, this movie addressed a lot of issues that, like, quote, Spider-Man purists have had with Tom Holland's Spider-Man since the get-go. It's like, oh, it's Iron Spider, Iron Man Jr., and he's not really Peter. Like all the things that people get angry about online, that, like, it's a movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Angry about those things. Yeah. But all those things have been solved here in a way that wasn't just to appease angry nerds on the internet, right? It was done in a really, really good way to make him his own character. And like, I think that's like, you know, people are going to be like, oh, finally, like, they listened to the fans. It's like, no, they really didn't. They just made Spider-Man work as his own character now. I know the people at Marvel were sitting there, you know, we want to make Spider-Man his own character. This is how we're going to introduce him. This is how we're going to build him up. But eventually he needs to be Spider-Man and not tied to all these other things. I think, I feel like that's what they're going, and they finally did it. And, you know, so like, I don't know. Spider-Man's in a great place right now.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there's some, a lot of truth there, but I hope that we're not done with Ned. I hope we're not done with MJ. I hope we're not done with Spider-Man and the MCU. And that's the part where, you know, I do love Tom Holland. I love his take on Spider-Man. I would love to see him play a more mature Spider-Man that I think that they've really set things up for. And I like, you know, I do like the idea of seeing Tom Holland leading a Spider-Man franchise that is very Spider-Man centric and less like world centric. I think that that's exciting. So that it is an exciting time for the character. It is an exciting, you know, place where they could take him. But I just hope we don't lose what we left behind. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that, you know, and I don't want to see Ned like showing up in Doctor Strange 3. You know what I mean? Like, I want Ned in Spider-Man. any thoughts on the sling ring? I saw some people a little upset about that.
I don't know. I thought it was neat. I really liked Doctor Strange in this movie. I liked his whole shtick, like everything that he did in the movie. I thought was really, really cool. I like that he's not the Sorcerer Supreme anymore. That's interesting.
Which definitely plays to him like being like, whatever, you know, like he's very much kind of like pseudo retired, last day on the job, you know.
Yeah. And it was weird because like he felt different from Doctor Strange.
Yes.
And I don't know if that plays into the whole fact that there was a teaser trailer for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness at the end of this movie, at the very end of the credits.
Yeah.
But it made a lot more sense afterwards. Like the whole movie, I'm like, this doesn't feel like Doctor Strange. He feels so different. Like he sat there and he looked through 14 million combinations to find the way that they beat Thanos. And you're telling me that he's just going to say, nope, this is the only way to do it. We got to kill them all.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. It felt weird. And then there's like a goatee guide. Like, I was like, what is the goatee guide? Is that a fake goatee, or is that like a trimming guide? Like what is this? Like, you know,
wait, a goatee guide. I didn't see that.
MJ, when they're in the wizard's basement, as they called it, the wizard's dungeon, she picks up this thing and it's like a little, it says like a goatee guide or goatee template or something like that.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay.
Yeah.
I missed that one.
And I was like, that's weird.
Speaking of which, did you notice they like made a lot of references to like locations and kind of special places from around the Spider, you know, franchises? You know what I mean? Like early on, we saw that the hanging car in New York, I forget what those things are called, but like the passenger car.
What?
All right. So I don't know. I've never lived in New York, Bell, but you know how there's a big thing. It's like a big metal thing and people get in it and they ride up a thing.
Subway?
Is it a subway? It's in the sky. No, subway's in the ground.
Yeah, but like some like in Chicago, they're all elevated. So they're calling the L train. I don't know if, I'm pretty sure New York subway goes above ground in places.
Yeah, but you know, Green Goblin is like, you've got to choose. You know, like when he's got
that's a good, Willem Dafoe.
Thank you very much. I have an old man in the sea, right?
I'm a man.
But so yeah, so like he's got the two of them, and like he drops one and he drops MJ, and then Peter goes and he saves everybody. But there was that thing. We saw that early on. And then the subway, they mentioned they kind of run into the subway, which is, I feel like, kind of a nod to Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man, who spent a lot of time in the subway with looking for, you know, clues onto about his parents. I don't know. They just, there seemed like there was a lot of spaces and places that they referenced throughout as kind of an homage. Like this felt like a love letter to the Spider-Man franchise as a whole, for the various Spider-Man franchises as a whole. And so anyway, I wanted to acknowledge that, just thinking about some of the Easter eggs that I'm sure will be continuously uncovered throughout. So you said that Dr. Strange, he doesn't quite feel like himself. I think you're right, man. I think that, like I said, he seems like a guy who's between jobs right now. And he just kind of had that general energy. I'm very curious what he's going to think about all of this when it's all said and done, because the implication was he's not going to remember casting the spell or why he did.
Yeah. And so he's not going to remember anything. And Wong is Sorcerer Supreme, and Mundo's coming back, and Doctor Strange is the biggest threat to the multiverse. But so, like, which Doctor Strange was that? Was that the Doctor Strange that we saw in Spider-Man No Way Home, or is that a different Doctor Strange from a different reality?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Could be both.
Like that's I don't know. But like Ned becoming a wizard, that was kind of cool.
I am magic.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I liked it. Overall, the movie was great. Like it was weird. I was thinking, like, okay, why, you know, Dr. Strange, okay, he's going to be in and out, but like he wasn't, he was predominantly kind of featured in there, which was interesting. And it kind of helped frame Spider-Man's decisions and stuff like that. And, the freaking astral projection scene and Peter's spider sense, like protecting him from Strange taking the thing when he's even not in his body, was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, the spider sense as a whole in this movie was a lot better. Like
called it that, though. I thought maybe that the big guys were going to tell him to call it spider sense.
Is Peter tingle?
Yeah, you got your tingle. Yeah, I got the tingle.
Yeah. But the way they represented it in this movie was really neat.
Yeah. No, like what you've been talking about, the arm thing, right?
Huh?
What you were saying, just the arm, he moves his arm and Strange can't get it. They never even address it. They never say that's because of his spider sense that his body's moving without him being inside.
No, and I figure, you know, that's what people are gathering. But like, what's really cool about it is if you look at Tom Holland, you can see wavy lines coming out of his head, like in the comics. I don't know if you noticed that or not. Yeah, no. if you look at Tom Holland while he's in the astral form, like that,
yeah,
you can see like distortions around his head that come out, that radiate out of his head in wavy lines.
No way. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's incredible. I need to see this movie again.
Yeah, watch for that. Watch for the goatee template.
Yeah, for sure, Brad. Okay. Goodness gracious, man. Just a fantastic film. What other thoughts, man? Anything else? We're kind of keeping this one a little bit quick because we're like right here at the holiday crunch time. But
yeah. Okay, so Spider-Man did not graduate high school. He's getting his GED.
That's right.
And he's not going to MIT. Right. and oh my gosh, the one thing that I wanted to see more than anything that I thought they were going to throw in there because it'd just be a throwaway thing not to do unless the actor had passed away. But the guy was like, rent.
right. Dude, I half expected him to like pop up too, be the same dude. But
I wanted it so bad. I heard the voice and I was like, oh, show him. Just do it. And they did.
I think it would have undercut the moment, though, you know, like been a little bit too much, too funny at that maybe. Kind of heavy time. So, but no, I was with you on that.
Yeah. And final little thing, new suit. What do you think? The sparkly blue. Where have I seen that suit? Is it the
sparkly blue suits?
It kind of reminded me of the animated series, but it was a much brighter blue. Like the cut of it, like with the design, kind of looked like the animated 90s Spider-Man, but the blue sparkly was, I swear I've seen that somewhere before, and I couldn't pick up where I'd seen that iteration of the suit.
Man, it felt a lot like an ice skater's suit, you know.
Well, I mean, it was homemade, you know,
which was great. I think this is the first time that we've seen a homemade suit.
Made a suit entirely by himself. Like,
well, no, that's not technically true, because remember, he had one before Iron Man hooked him up.
Well, I mean, the first like professional quote Spider-Man suit that he has made entirely by himself.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. No more 3D printing machine that can make anything.
Yeah. No more fabricators. You know. No.
He's got a sewing machine now. He's doing it up. You know, he doesn't have the resources of Stark Industries. Yeah. It's great, man. That's classic Peter Parker. That's classic Spider-Man. I it's a little shinier than than my personal taste, my personal liking, but my guess is it'll probably go through a few iterations before we see him back for.
Well, that's why I was trying to pinpoint, like, where has the shiny suit come in from? I swear I've seen that somewhere.
I think, I mean, like Garfield's, well, no, his was kind of subtle, wasn't it? I don't know. You're right. It does. There's something pseudo familiar about it, but I can't put my finger on where that might be.
Yeah.
Trilogy, the home trilogy that we've just had, I'm assuming the next Spider-Man will probably not be called Spider-Man 4, The Quest for Peace. I'm curious, what do you think? Do you think they'll use a different like name or word to kind of set this new trilogy in its place?
You know, I was thinking about that. I don't know, because, you know, we had Homecoming, Far From Home, No Way Home. Will they continue the home thing? Like,
I don't think so.
Spider-Man, Welcome Home, and like it's him being in New York or something like that. I don't know.
I think we're done with home, man. I think the home trilogy was really about, you know, this like him being kind of merged with the MCU, and I think what's going forward is going to be a very new Spider-Man. Yes, in the MCU, but a very different kind of feel to it. So I think, you know, I hope they don't call it four. Some Sony executive is going to call it Spider-Man 4, and that person needs to be fired.
But, well, it depends on who makes it and produces it and stuff like that, I guess. Whatever the contract negotiations are. Because wasn't Tom Holland's MCU Spider-Man like 5 movies or something?
And I think they're supposed to. They're still if I'm not mistaken, they're still in talks. You know, he's obviously wanting to do it again. Like, I've seen different reports and different interviews and yada, yada, yada. My understanding, man, is that he's got at least one more MCU appearance that's kind of guaranteed. But in terms of like, you know, the next level, you know, what that means for Spider-Man, what that means for Tom Holland, I think there's just a lot of unknowns. But for me, man, I'm trying not to let those things get in the way of the fact that I just absolutely love this film. It meant the world to me. Props to everybody who made this thing happen, because this is just the best Christmas present this year. And it is a 5 out of 5 for me, man. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, it was the first movie in a while where I was super surprised by like a cameo, and that just like, I was like, holy crap. Like, audibly was like, whoa, because I wasn't right. expecting that. And like, that doesn't happen to me a lot in movies, because, you know, you read articles or whatever, and it's like, oh, I'm a reporter guy, and I'm casually throwing out something that I don't know is a spoiler. And so, like, you know, you read it and you think, oh, that's just common knowledge then. And then it turns out to be something critically important to the plot. And you're like, thanks a lot. Right. You know, those kinds of things happen all the time. And I'm totally surprised that I did not get that spoiled. And, you know, not just from that fact, but that was one of the things, you know, seeing the other Spider-Man, having Spider-Man be his own Spider-Man now. You know, mm-hmm. I had no problems with the Iron Man Jr. kind of stuff. Like, you know, I think how they wedged him into the MCU and how they made it work. I think it worked. And but now it's going to be really cool to see standalone Spider-Man. Like, and this set that up beautifully. We got some nice closure for old Andrew and Toby. And whatever. 5 out of 5.
There it is. Wow. It's a rare 5 out of 5 for both of us. But let us know what y'all thought about the movie. You can head over to Twitter at TV Talk FM is the place to do it. Follow Bell at Ring That Bell. That is going to do it for us for this week. But don't worry, we'll be back in a flash. Thompson.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.